Have you got game? The Mowdown.
This is Got Game. My name is Momin Qureshi, Christine Chubb, Patrick Lucciani, Steve Leung, all here.
Yay.
I don't know the last time we had all of us at one time. It is. It is a Valentine's miracle. That was last week. I don't know.
Well, that was 2 weeks ago when this airs. So
yeah, I guess. Well, whatever.
So let's not make reference to time.
That's but, well, I do want to make reference to one thing, and that's, you know what today is? I found out this morning. You know what today is? Today is the 30th anniversary of.
Is it really?
Yeah. Apparently today is the 30th.
30 days Saturday. What's today?
Yeah, Saturday.
February the 20th.
Oh, it's... poor Steve has no idea. Well, you would appreciate it. It's The Legend of Zelda.
Zelda, the anniversary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Steve's with it now. He's down.
You should have brought your headphones so you could have been in on the party.
Yeah, I always forget.
Yeah. So there you go. Legend of Zelda. 30 years today, Christine. How do you feel about that?
I feel old. I feel real old.
Yeah.
Hey. Zelda always reminds me of, like, my youth. Like, it's really the game that, one of the games that defined my world of video game playing when I was younger. I would sit in my parents' basement and play Zelda for hours.
Really? The gamer playing in the parents' basement? You're going to go to that trope?
Hey, and my video game console was in the basement, too.
Yeah, mine was, too.
It's the darkest room of the
course.
House.
Yeah.
So that's where they tuck you away, you know?
That's right.
Just go down there and don't bother me.
Another way to make us feel old, Street Fighter's 25 years old now. Like, Street Fighter 2, 25 years old.
Well, Street Fighter 5 is only, like, a few days old.
Yes, it is.
Before we get to that, just let me say quickly, we have a very, very super, super packed show this week.
Yes. Yeah.
So here's what's happening. Chris Waters, he wrote the game, The Gamer's Bucket List, 50 Games to Play Before You Die. He's from GameSpot. He's going to join us a little later on to talk about the list. We talked about it in detail, the actual list, a couple weeks ago. You can go to sportsnet.ca/590/gotgame, Christine?
Yeah, you got it.
I got it right.
Nailed it.
All right, so that's where we had the show. It's two weeks ago, our episode, we went in detail through the list. Apparently, Chris Waters has heard that podcast. And is coming on today to talk about
the
list. Yell at us, defend the list, whatever. So that's coming up a little later. I highly recommend you stick around because it's going to be very interesting. Also, our pal Riley Little from GameRant.com wrote a really interesting column about why exclusives don't matter anymore to a point. That's relating back to the whole Quantum Break issue and the fact that it's going to be on both Xbox Ones and the PC. That happened last week. So again, you can go check out the podcast on iTunes or TuneIn or on the site, on the blog. Check that out. Christine's going to have a review of Assassin's Creed Chronicles Russia.
Yep.
Patrick. You're going to have a review of Firewatch. Steve, you're going to talk about Street Fighter V a little bit. Not full review, but just your early thoughts. So
Fighters.
To say that we have a packed show this week is a gross understatement. Plus, we hope I have a whole bunch of news and tidbits to talk about. But Steve, let's lead off with you in Street Fighter V. It's out. Well, you've talked about in the past about how you're a huge, huge, huge Street Fighter fan.
Fighting.
But it didn't. It's not a smooth start for Street Fighter.
Streets.
No. Like, it's all over Twitter. The server issues on launch day were abysmal, because what you have to understand about this game is as soon as you log in or if you fire up the game, you instantly get connected to the Capcom servers, and they were crashing all the time.
Ew.
So that compounded with the fact that the game really did launch incomplete.
Yeah, like, those are the best. Incomplete game launches. Yay!
And from what I understand about gamers, they are very patient and understanding and don't get mad at
all.
So
they don't expect a complete... final product.
It's not like they paid $70 for it.
How much did you pay for it?
I paid $80.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, I completed $80. Yeah, okay, cool.
So,
that's fine. I'm not mad.
Basically, like, the reason why I say it's incomplete, because there are literally features, like, that would be, like, single-player features that you, like, hover over them when you highlight them.
Yeah.
You see a little screen of text? This feature will be available in March.
What?
And a lot of, and like one of them is particularly like the single player features, because basically this game, when you fire it up, you're instantly just connected, and the game is instantly starting to search for matches for you to play with people online. Because this game, while I like the fact that it's putting the competitive aspect of Street Fighter, because it's trying to make everyone eventually play in tournaments with the whole Capcom Fighters Network thing they have going on in the ranking system, it just doesn't do anything for people who are maybe new to Street Fighter and want to learn a little about it. The story mode, I beat it all with all 16 characters in an hour, hour and a half.
What?
And, wow. And the CPU difficulty is like less than easy. They just literally stand there. They don't attack, so it doesn't teach you anything. So you have that, and then you have your training mode, which is standard in every fighting game, which basically will just let you practice combos and whatnot. But it doesn't actually teach you how to play Street Fighter. So like when I'm playing right now, like I see people just like, they're just pressing buttons. They have no idea what they're doing, and I'm murdering them, and then they just rage quit on me.
Right.
So it's just I feel kind of bad because there's no learning tutorial, and that's what one of the modes that they took out would have been there, because it's something called the challenge mode, right? The challenge mode is in most fighting games now, and it's basically just a way. It's like you see like a combo for you to do, and you can see like a tutorial, but how to do this combo, right? So people have a basic understanding of, you know, what they should be looking for instead of just pressing every button on the stick or on the pad. That's like the bad part. Also, another thing that's potentially really bad is that, like, if you're connected to the internet and you're playing local multiplayer, you could just be logged out of the server and the game could quit.
That sucks.
Wow. So not just having a few problems, it's having a ton of problems.
Now, that was like day one. Like, they had a patch immediately, and the server issues did get better. It got a little more stable. But they're still a little wonky. So that's the bad part. What's good about it, though, is I have had some like really whack connections where people seem to be teleporting around the screen. But that's the case in most online fighting games. So like my online sort of experience has been pretty good so far. Like I haven't been kind of dropping combos and dropping inputs unless it was my own fault for the most part. And just for the game itself, like the system itself, my impression of it is like I really enjoy it. There are a lot of people who liked Street Fighter 4. I wasn't a huge fan of it, and where that meta game evolved, this is like much simpler, much stripped down. The combos are a lot simpler to do, and it just feels more like pure Street Fighter to me. Like it feels a lot more like Street Fighter 2, or like just like the older games where it's focusing more on the interaction of like in fighting, it's called footsie play. Just basically like the rock, paper, scissors of it. Like if you throw out this move, I can press this move to beat that, and vice versa. Like it's kind of that interaction where it's less focused on an insane kind of cross-up setup or an insane combo that just demolishes you. It's more about that interaction between two people pressing a singular button against another singular button, basically.
Right.
So it has potential because I think they said every 2 months they're gonna be releasing a new character. Like so they have a succession plan because this is supposed to be like a game as a service, and I think you'll be able to buy the characters outright because like the shop is also disabled. That's coming in March.
Okay.
Right. But through everything you do in the game, through like playing the story mode, they also have a survival mode, which is the only other single player mode besides training mode. And just what they want you to actually do playing online against real opponents, you're always collecting fight money, win or lose. And so it's like similar to League of Legends or any of the other MOBAs, just like the more you play, like the more you grind, the more fight money you collect, and the more you'll be able, and like you'll be able to unlock characters for free. Like, I don't know what the pricing structure is yet, obviously, but I'm hoping it isn't like that crazy. Like you have to pour in like at least 100 matches or something to unlock a new character, or you know, pay the, I don't know, the $10 they're probably gonna charge for them.
Well, how many characters were released on launch?
16 characters on launch,
right?
Which sounds awful compared to the 48 that were in the last Street Fighter game, like Ultra Street Fighter 4.
Right.
But Street Fighter 4, when that game first launched, I think it launched with maybe, I think in the arcade it launched with 8, I'm going to say maybe 10 characters. So like Street Fighter is always an evolving thing, so they always have new iterations, which always confuse people because there's like Street Fighter 4, Super Street Fighter 4, Super Street Fighter 4 AE, and so on and so forth, building up to Ultra Street Fighter 4. So I think there will just be Street Fighter 5, and that's it. Right now it just seems like $80 is quite the investment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's worth it for me because I'm going to be playing this game for a very, very long time, like at least like years upon years.
Right.
But it's still difficult for me to make a true assessment on it just because I haven't seen where a lot of the game is kind of going right now.
Right.
And also it's just it's just straight up incomplete. Yeah. Right, like, right. Like it's not fully feature.
The worst kind of grade you can get, incomplete.
Yeah, like you can't assess it yet because it is incomplete. So for those who like are on the fence about it, I'd wait until at least March when like more of the features roll out, and then we see like where this is actually going.
All right, so maybe what we can do is we can have you back in when the game, when you feel you're ready to do a full-on review of Street Fighter V. But as for right now, problems, many of them. All right, so you're listening to Got Game, Moment, Christine, Patrick, and Steve with you. There's lots to talk about, but next weekend is Oscar weekend.
Yes, it is.
And
it
is. There is much talk that Leonardo DiCaprio is going to get his first ever golden statue.
Nope.
No?
The bear's going to win.
Who is?
The bear.
The bear, yeah. We already talked about it last week. The bear. Write-in vote.
You can't convince me.
I said during the Super Bowl that, you know, congratulations to Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos for the win, so I called that, so I'm going to say congratulations, Leonardo DiCaprio, on your Oscar.
That's true. You did call it before the Super Bowl started.
Before this movie came out, I thought that Eddie Redmayne had a solid lock.
I did too.
Actor. Even when I didn't even see the movie, I saw the trailer. I was like, "That son of a bitch is gonna go 2 for 2."
Yeah, I didn't see
Tom
the Danish.
Hanks it up.
I haven't seen Theory of Everything or the Danish Girl, and I was like, "Oh, Redmayne's gonna go back to back." So yeah, it's the first time probably since Hanks that somebody's gonna do the double dip. But
and now, like, Team Leo is in hardcore.
And apparently, I mean, I think the only one of us has seen The Revenant is Patrick, right? You haven't seen Steve?
No.
So apparently he is worthy
yes,
of this year,
100%.
But the point is, the
but
reason
he's been worthy before.
True.
He yes. was super.
The Aviator. Excuse he was me. Probably very worthy of yeah. in The Aviator.
Gangs of New York.
Gangs of New York. Did you see Gangs of New York? That was
he
amazing.
Should have got it for Gangs Aviator. Of New York. Aviator was pretty good.
Because I think he's been nominated 5 times. Gangs of New York, Aviator, Blood Diamond, Titanic, and...
Best Supporting for What's Eating.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape, yeah. That's right. So he's been nominated a few times. But the reason we're talking about it on this show is because somebody has gone out, of course, and made a game about it. And it's awesome.
There's
so what you're hearing is the soundtrack right now to Leonardo DiCaprio's Red Carpet Oscar Rampage. I think that's what it's called. And the game is basically like an 8-bit side-scroller. And you play as Leonardo DiCaprio trying to ditch the paparazzi on the red carpet and capture your Oscar. So as you're going through, you're on the red carpet, yeah. And paparazzi are trying to get in your way. Icebergs are trying to get in your way, which I think is hilarious, of course, Titanic.
Yeah.
And you're racing alongside your fellow competitors. So whether it's Eddie Redmayne or it's, I don't know, remember who the other ones are, but you're racing alongside them. And the game is great. It's a pretty fun game to play for a while. It's very basic controls and everything. But the funniest part is the bonus games.
The
bonus games are hilarious. There's a bonus game called Spot the Black Nominee.
Oh my god.
Which was so funny when I was playing it.
That's pretty funny.
And it's essentially like Where's Waldo? And you're just trying to find like the one black guy in the crowd. And we all know, you know, Oscar's so white and all that kind of stuff with the lack
yeah.
of. And so I was just dying laughing when
it
I was playing that.
There's one called like Quaalude Rush or something,
yeah.
And he's just laying on the carpet, like trying to crawl to the limousine because he's so high.
That's great.
So kudos to whoever made Leonardo DiCaprio's Red Carpet Oscar, Red Carpet Rampage. If you haven't played it, give it a Google, check it out. You can probably find a link to it on our. We'll put the video or something up on our blog.
Yeah.
But it's pretty damn funny,
That's
and it's worth
funny.
Checking out. And yeah, so maybe, you know, before you sit down and watch the Oscars, fire it up on your laptop or
while
on your...
you watch the red carpet.
Right.
Play. Red Carpet Rampage.
Now you should know it's playable on mobile because I played it on my phone. Is where I played it,
yeah.
But it was quite the fun game. And
you
I
wonder
like
if
it.
It'll make millions of dollars like that stupid Kim Kardashian game.
Call it what you want, but it's made $100 million.
$100 million.
And the same developer is going to make a Taylor Swift game,
of course,
you know,
and
that's
probably
gonna
going to make
is
the
it
same
just
amount of money.
Shake It Off.
Yeah. I have no idea what it will be called, but it's probably going to make...
It'll be like Taylor's heartbreak love
bang.
Story.
Yeah.
We belong together.
But you know what? This isn't new, though, because remember when Lindsay Lohan put out a game, it made a lot
that
of money?
Terrible,
Britney Spears
that.
Put out a game, it made a lot of money.
But comparatively to the Kim Kardashian game, they're nothing. Like, that game
yeah.
is just...
Just crushed.
Rolling.
Say what you will about Kimmy K and the Kardashians. Love them or hate them, they get a lot of attention and people want to check them out.
Yep. They're extremely
why.
Popular with their reality TV show.
You could say
and,
that people want to keep up with them.
Look, yeah. I use the term. The term yeah. reality is very loose
in
that show.
I'm putting air quotes. Reality television.
Reality.
But all those people who watch that show may not be necessarily video gamers, but they all have a smartphone.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, the latest Kim K thing is this game. Let's download it and see what it's all about.
Cash money in the bank.
Yeah, because that's what they need.
Well,
I mean, I guess
they do
now,
need it.
Yeah.
Yo, what up? Hopefully, leave Zuckerberg alone and ask your wife for some money.
Hopefully they're getting a substantial sum for this.
Your wife just banked $100 million. Why you got to bother Zuckerberg for your $57
million? Yeah. Put out another Kim K game.
Right on.
Didn't he make Kanye made a game?
Oh yeah, the Kanye's mother goes to heaven.
Oh, that's right. The trailer with the really awkward trailer with his mom flying to heaven on the back of the Pegasus.
It's hard to knock because it's about his dead mom.
I know.
You feel kind of. I don't want.
I'm not knocking the game. We haven't actually seen the full game yet, but the trailer was a little
weird.
It was weird.
He said, and Kanye says it's like the hardest thing to do.
Now I'm surprised. Yeah.
Surprisingly, it's difficult to make a video.
Guys, you should all be clapping.
You know who should make a game is the person who made Red Carpet Rampage should make a game about Kanye, but it's about him rushing the stage and taking away mics from people.
Oh, that would
so
be good.
Kanye's
getting into fights with
Grammys
paparazzi.
Rampage.
Yeah.
Or I guess it was MTV Awards when he did that to Taylor Swift. But anyway.
But whatever.
I'm going to let you finish.
See?
That's right.
That's what the
he just constantly
called.
Interrupts people.
The game should be called, the premise of the game is trying to not let people finish their speeches, and you're Kanye, and you try to rush the stage and take mics away from them.
I'd play it.
Patton, yeah. See, you're the issue here, Patrick. Yeah. You're giving these people $100 million for the Kim Kardashian game.
I'm not surprised.
I'm not either.
That Taylor Swift game is going to make
those
so much
money. Those mobile games are just making so much dough.
Of course. I mean, look.
They're all crap.
Not all
Can
of them.
Can I just say that now?
Not all of them.
The vast majority of mobile games are crap.
There are a lot of good mobile games out there.
What's the one with Kate Upton?
There's a Kate Upton mobile game?
God, hold on, I'll Google it while we talk about it with something else.
I mean, I got buddies. They play this one mobile game all the time. It's called Puzzles and Dragons. It's like originally a Japanese game, and like they spent like thousands of dollars on this game.
Really?
That's why I'm not playing, because it'd be terrible for me and my wallet.
Game of War Fire Age.
Oh, the commercial.
She was doing the commercial
for it. Kate Upton's doing the commercial for it. That game is a piece of crap. And I don't understand how they are able to afford to even have her rep their show. They must be making so much money that you know, they're able to hire her and say, oh, play this really bad game, guys, because it's mobile game.
But
they're all going to make so much bank
off
of it.
They all do it, though. There's her for that game. Schwarzenegger for how many of those commercials have you seen in the last couple
a
weeks?
A bajillion.
They are skipping the hell out of that game.
I was watching a show the other day, and it was every other commercial was for that Schwarzenegger.
I don't even want to touch it.
And the worst part is, the first time I saw the commercial, I was like, Schwarzenegger's back in a good war movie. What is this? And then I see the game,
no,
and I'm like,
it's a mobile game.
And then there's
and you know
Christoph
it's pay to
Waltz
win.
Is in one too.
Was it
Christoph Waltz? Does the
he does? Isn't it Boom Beach?
No, it's Clash of Clans,
which I don't
hate so much. Clash of Clans is okay.
I have a couple of cousins who play that game a lot. I almost said pay that game
because
they do.
That's essentially what you do with
because all those games are microtransactions. So when they say free to play,
that's why
I try when I play Clash of Clans, I try my best not to purchase anything.
But it's hard though.
But
I try my best
not to
I think it's fair to say though that none of these games would ever make the 50 games to play before you die list.
God,
not the Kim
not.
Kardashian one.
No, well, maybe you
play
that
Kim
game
Kardashian
and then
before you die.
Maybe play that game and then you die because you realize, well, that's it. I've maximized life.
I literally have nothing else to play.
I have hit rock bottom and there's nothing else I can do with my life.
I literally gave the Kardashians money. That is how this is my thinking process.
And you know what? If you want to give the Kardashians money and you buy something from their clothing line or you buy one of their anyway, the point is there is the book out called The Gamer's Bucket List 50 Games to Play Before You Die. It is written by Chris Waters. He works for GameSpot. We talked about it a couple weeks ago on our show.
You can
go to sportsnet.ca/590/got game. You can find our blog up there. Only been doing this for 8 years. Or you can go to iTunes or TuneIn and find our episode from 2 weeks ago where we went in depth detail and talked about the book and the list and what we thought should be on the list, what shouldn't be on the list, disagreements, all that kind of stuff. But we didn't give the author a chance to defend himself. You wrote this book called The Gamer's Bucket List, 50 Games to Play Before You Die. We know you also work for GameSpot, so you're in the gaming industry. we talked about this book in depth a couple weeks ago, and when I was booking this interview, I was talking to the person that was doing all the booking for me, and he's I was like, oh, we talked about it already. He's like, oh, can I get a link? And I was like, oh, no, I think Chris is going to hear the show before he comes on. So I understand that you heard the show that we talked about it. Before we get into the list, I hope that you think that we were fair and just when we were talking about the list.
Oh, man, moment, not only were you guys totally fair and just, but you were also like, you spoke with the kind of like enthusiasm for gaming and for like having these discussions that like I put into the book. Like, that's why I wrote it. Like, that's why I love just having these talks and having disagreements and like agreeing on which games should be in there or not. And yeah, oh, it was a thrill to hear you guys.
He doesn't hate
it.
Us.
Well, here's the thing though. Like, one of the things we talked about is anytime any sort of list is generated, I think the whole purpose of it is for people to talk about it, right? I mean, you don't ever want to put out a list and have people go like, yeah, sure. And then like just walk away from it.
Oh, that's a pretty good list. I'll put the book down now.
Yeah.
Yep. Nope. Nothing to add here.
Yeah. Everything is right. Yeah. Okay. So the reason we wanted to have you on it is in part to talk about the list, but I wanted to get more of your thought process because I can't imagine trying to put together. I've been a gamer my whole life. We all have around this table. We've been doing the show for almost 8 years. And I cannot imagine having to sit there and pick just 50 that I would turn to people and say, these are the games you should play. So how hard was it for you to basically come up with this list? I mean, how many did you have to start with and how did you end up with these 50?
Oh, man. Well, I like started and I just sat down and I wrote a bunch of my favorite games into a spreadsheet. And I was like, all right, yeah, this is a good start. But wait a minute. There's like really too many first-person shooters in there, aren't there?
Yeah.
And oh wait, like, can you even like? I loved Halo 2, but like, I loved it because it was Xbox Live. Like, can you even? Is it even the same? So I started running up against these questions early on. I'm like, okay, how am I going to? This is my list. I have to pare it down somehow. Mm-hmm. And so you guys talked about one of the big, you know, sort of walls I put down, which was if a game is like awesome online, that's kind of can be fleeting. And so I left that off the list, and that, you know, accounted for no shortage of big omissions.
Yeah,
right.
But then other stuff, you know, like I tried to, like, I had too many first-person shooters because I really love that genre, but I wanted to make it representative of the, like, diversity of games and more of a survey kind of thing. And so I started adding, you know, in my spreadsheet, like, genre afterwards. And once certain genres started stacking up, then I would, like, narrow that down. And then I would also notice, oh, I don't have anything from this genre. What could I put in here to try to broaden out, flesh out the list?
Now, you gave a special shout-out to the game Spelunky. What is it about Spelunky that you love so much? Because you put that first in the book because you love it so much, so.
Oh, my God, Spelunky. So, it's one thing, all right, it's one thing to be, you know, I feel like it's one thing to be obsessed with and pour just, like, hundreds of hours into a game when you are in middle school or high school or college even. Like, when you have... Basically, when you're not living an adult life with a job.
Like, basically, when you have no responsibilities at all and you have someone cooking your food for you, you can 4 hours in the game.
You don't have to do all this other stuff that you've built for yourself. Spelunky was not a game like that for me. I was fully employed, married, like, social life, all this stuff, and like, I still put like hundreds of hours into Spelunky because it just captured my imagination and I obsessed over it so much, and like, some of my friends at work played it so much. It became this like sort of cultural nexus for us. And I think the reason is this, and I try to describe this in the book, like the closing lines of my write-up for Spelunky is like, this is not a game that gives you like all these awesome skills and abilities and says, all right, you're an adventurer now. Cool. This is a game that's like, puts you in this world full of danger and hidden secrets and gives you like a very modest amount of things you can do. And it's like, okay, you want to be an adventurer? Prove it.
Right.
And I got obsessed with proving it.
You know, I imagine, like, I don't know about you, but if I was making this list, I would be like, hey, this is kind of a cool idea at the beginning. And then I'd have, like, you know, the spreadsheets and all the wall with all the strings on it connecting everything.
Just gone mad.
And I would have, like a month into it, I'd been like, oh my God, what have I done? And I would have had, like, bags under my eyes and my hair would have been, like, all messed up. And I'd be like, I can't do this anymore. I mean, did you have moments where you were just, like, you know, at your wit's end? Like, how do I do this? How do I get this down to just the 50?
Dude, I had moments that were literally like, all right, once this book is out, people are coming out. You're going to have to go on, like, a radio show, and some dudes are going to be like, I can't believe you didn't put Chrono Trigger in there.
That's me. That's me.
Steve is still really pissed about that, too.
That was Steve's very first comment. I mean, Steve, what do you, like, I guess that's still your big beef there.
Yeah, because I think Chrono Trigger is the greatest game of all time. I think there's no game that's been ever better than this game, period.
So do you have a rebuttal for yourself, Chris?
I just think it's really irresponsible to give Frost swords, and I can't promote it.
All right, sounds good.
No, I mean, Chrono Trigger is a phenomenal game, and I have people in my life who love it so much. I played about half of it in a run a couple of years ago and didn't get to the end of it. So I don't, you know, I like part of it, but the challenge is like, okay, just because like I didn't get through this game necessarily or it didn't like enamor me, like that doesn't mean that, you know, there aren't people who rave about it as the best game of all time. So, all right, how do I make that decision? How do I parse this out? And I think I came down wanting to have a JRPG in there, from, you know, that era. And I went with the Final Fantasy VI because it was, like, one of the best in the Final Fantasy series. And that, like, I think the weight of that series name was something I wanted to have represented in the book. And it also allowed me, in one of the paragraphs in that write-up, to sort of talk about nostalgia and, like, how it's such a powerful force in the gaming industry and how these names, these series names, get so much power behind them. And the fact that, like, you know, you pick up any game that says Final Fantasy, you're going to get a wildly different experience, you know, in depending on what you grab. But this is one of the ones that is going to be like, okay, this is why this name is so big. And it was kind of the same way with, like, Mega Man 2. That's kind of, like, the game that earned that series its stripes. But
for sure,
as you guys saw in your discussion about the game before, like, just because, you know, just because the game, like, minted a series or was the best then doesn't necessarily mean it is the best now, or even that it made it onto the list.
Right. We're talking to Chris Waters. He wrote the Gamer's Bucket List, 50 Games to Play Before You Die. He also works for GameSpot. Chris, the reason I commend you more than anything is that the gaming community isn't known to be rational or calm a lot of the time. And I just want to know, what has your Twitter feed been like since you wrote this book? What has your text messages been like? I mean, I imagine there's some people that have been kind of like blowing up your feeds being like, whoa, where is this game?
Where's Chrono Trigger?
You know, it's interesting because I feel like, so working for GameSpot, like I wrote reviews for the site for years, and I'm in a lot of videos on that site. And so people come into the comments and will definitely just blast me sometimes.
Sure.
About, like, you know, anything from like what I said about the game to what I look like. You know,
oh, that's hello, but, internet.
Yeah, right. But I wonder. I think it's maybe because this is just like, it's just me who wrote this book, and you're just, the only way to get in touch with me through this book is to at me on Twitter. Like, because that's a much more, I don't know, personal or sort of direct thing than just, like, throwing something in a comment section.
Yeah.
Because you don't really have an audience, maybe. People have been very cordial. Like, even people who are like, dude, BioShock. BioShock is the most tremendous game
right.
ever made. And they will, like, throw me 5 tweets about why it's so good. But the last tweet will be like, interesting book, though. Like, thanks for writing it.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just rewrite the book and put the file in there.
If you want to hit
Here's my secret plan. It's I just have to write the second book.
Yeah. 50 more games.
50
more games. If you want to hit
endless.
If you want to have Chris at CT Waters on Twitter, you know, Chris, I mean, like this, like I said, this list is something that I think is tough to write. Was there a game or two where you sat there and like desperately wanted on the list and just had a hard time, you know, like your children, you had to pick your favorites and just had a hard time leaving it off the list?
Oh, man. Was there one? Yeah, there were a few. I think what I really wanted to, I think Left 4 Dead 2 was one that was like right down the wire for me because I had such like, because that's like, you know, like the better of the two, Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
Because that game and that dynamic of like pushing forward through this dynamic zombie horde, like, so well done and so cool. But that one didn't make it on the list. And I, you know, again, that sort of, I was able to like use the online thing as like It helped me more than anything.
That was your scapegoat.
Yeah, right? You got to like narrow it down and be like, okay, well, if I have a discussion, then I can just say, no, it's the online thing. Maybe people don't have an internet connection. They won't be able to enjoy it the way it's meant to be enjoyed. But, I mean, that's not really totally true of Left 4 Dead 2. But I'm also a huge fan of the Deus Ex series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just the way that you can, you know, break things down and like in take apart situations in any number of ways, and also their vision of the future, of this like augmented future and this divided society, I think is really fascinating. But I couldn't really figure out which one to put in there. Like, my best experience was with the first one, but that one has not aged super well. And, you know, Human Revolution was really cool, but it had its, you know, boss fight drawbacks and stuff like that. So, yeah, that was another one that I wished I had been able to get on there.
We have we have special love for Deus Ex because it's a Canadian-made game, so we love talking about those games up here.
Nice.
And when you look back at the list in retrospect, was there anything you would have changed? I mean, I know now it's published and it's sort of in you know, it's set for all time, but was there anything you look back and like, if I redid it, I would do this instead?
Oh, dude, it was the worst timing because I was writing this book in like August of last year.
Right.
And so I'm reading all these previews and seeing all these like late, you know, like almost ready builds of these great games that are coming out like last fall.
Right.
And I couldn't, you know. Couldn't consider Fallout 4 for the list. I couldn't consider Metal Gear Solid 5. I couldn't, you know, Forza Motorsport 6. You know, like,
right.
So there were a few that I was sort of like teetering on the edge of, but I was like, I can't. And now, like, XCOM 2 is out now, and XCOM and the Unknown is in there. Like, it's just, I knew that the book was, like, entries were going to be, like, you know, that the march of time is not going to be kind.
No. Yeah, but if you know, there was a line that you would have had to draw at one point, otherwise you would have just kept putting the book off and then been like a real journalist and not done anything because you're procrastinating.
That's exactly it, yeah. Having a deadline was actually really helpful in this case because I was able to, I just had to be like, look, I'm arguing between, like, great game A and great game B. Mm-hmm. Both great games, just put them on lists. Put them on the list and it's going to be fine. You got to get these write-ups done.
Well, I mean, just to try to pick your brain here a little bit, one of the things that I looked at the list and I was like, you know, Mario games have a very special place in people's hearts. You know, it's really the franchise that kicked gaming into that next evolution back from when most of us were kids. How did you settle on which Mario game you put in there? I know you had two. You had Mario Galaxy 2 and you had Super Mario World, I think. How did you pick the one that you wanted to go with?
Yeah, well, then there's also Super Smash Brothers
and
Mario Kart 8. You know, Mario makes a bunch of appearances.
Right, yeah.
In terms of sort of like that, yeah, that mainline Mario series, I thought, like, okay, there, Mario, like, was super impactful for 2D platformers, and then with Mario 64, set the stage for, like, 3D platformers. And,
right.
You know, that became a standard for many, many years. So I wanted to, I thought that it was worthwhile representing the pinnacles of both of those. And so Super Mario World and Super Mario Galaxy 2 ended up being my choices to, like, represent those because they're also, you know, the, like, that Mario standard is so high. And so to have those, they're basically paragons of, like, a 2D platformer and a 3D platformer. And like you guys are saying in the previous show, Super Mario World, like, that's one of the benefits of this sort of pixel art is it tends to endure way better than, say, N64 art or you know, early PS2 art.
Yeah, that's very true.
That stuff tends to get criticized, you know, like 10, 20 years down the road. You're like, oh, man, Grand Theft Auto 3 looked like crap. Like, how could you pay that? But, like, if you're playing, like, pixel art like Mario, that's, like, timeless almost. It's kind of weird that it works like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really interesting that way. And you guys were talking about some games last time that, you know, I think were sort of so seminal. They got at one of the other questions I had to tackle with the book, which is like, all right, the battle of my own nostalgia.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Is, okay, like, what is playable right now? What is going to be a good experience for someone just picking this up?
Yeah.
Not just, you know, someone for the first time or someone who, like, hasn't played games in years and picks it up, or someone who plays games all the time and picks it up.
Yeah,
you're right, because so much of a game's importance to you has to do with the time and the place in your life that you played it and what was going on in your life at that time. I mean, you know, I have such a connection to Super Mario Brothers 3. It's my favorite one. But I think that's less because of the game and more because
nostalgia.
I was in fifth grade and I had an NES and my cousins would all come over and it was just what was happening in my life at that time that made that game so important for me.
Oh, absolutely. And that, I mean, that game definitely still holds up as one of the classics. But yeah. I think one of the games you guys mentioned is personally very, like, very important to me in my life, and that's GoldenEye.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. Man, you try to play that game now.
I know. Thank you.
So good, dude.
Yeah, I know. I fire it up every now and then, and I still love it. But, again, it's because I still think of, like,
nostalgia.
My 16-year-old self playing it versus, like, myself now.
Golden Gun right? Facility.
It's a struggle,
yeah.
And I'm like, God, I just want to be back in those hallways.
Yeah.
Like, I would always play Natalia, who had this bright blue blouse.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Like, I got, a lot better than a bunch of my friends, so they would have this, like, Pavlovian response to seeing the blue blouse.
That's great.
It was so fun, but, yeah. You compare that to, like, you know, a Halo Combat Evolved or, like, any dual-stick twin or, you know, first-person shooter, and it's a tough comparison.
It is. You're right. Absolutely, it is. Chris, thanks for your time, man. I appreciate you coming on and talking about your list and giving us your thought process. And thanks for listening to the show and willing to come on with us after hearing the episode a couple of weeks ago.
Oh my goodness, you guys were so great. I was like, you're talking about the book. You're talking about it. You're like foreshadowing these conversations you're going to have about, like, why didn't this dumbass put this on here? And you're like, I'm like, all right, just get to it. Just rip off the Band-Aid. Just tell me I'm stupid. But no, you guys were super gracious. It was such a treat to listen to it and so fun to come on and talk with you.
So that's Chris Waters. The game is called The Gamer's Bucket List, 50 Games to Play Before You Die. Go buy it anywhere that you can get books, ebooks, any of that stuff, real paperback or digital copies, whatever you want. Super nice guy. I'm glad he came on to talk about it. It was quite funny, and I'm glad he had the attitude that we had, which is it's tough to compile lists like that, yeah. But yeah. You know that when you make a list like that, people are going to talk, and you just got to – but it's always good to have rational talk about it.
Of course.
Rational, yeah. Guys. Come on.
Yeah, rational. Rational.
Don't get angry at the guy.
Hey, you can't spell irrational without rational.
No, you can't.
You can't.
Like, calm down, guys.
All right. How about we do some rational reviews? Patrick.
Okay.
No pressure. Get your rational face on.
Okay.
One of the games that's been really talked about a lot.
Yeah.
In the last couple of weeks, and honestly, it's a game that I didn't know much about until you brought it up to me, like, I think it was like 3 weeks or a month ago, and you're like, hey, have you heard of this game called Firewatch?
Yeah.
And I was like, no. And then you told me what, like, kind of the premise of it. I was like, that sounds like a wicked game. And then, like, online, there's been a lot of buzz about it, and a lot of people have been playing it. You've played Firewatch now. Begin by telling us, what is Firewatch?
So, it's like,
he's like, stay rational.
Firewatch is a game. So Campo Santo developed the game. It's two guys that were creative leads for the Walking Dead game from Telltale. Right. They work for Telltale. So immediately I'm
solid,
like,
game, yeah.
Sold.
Good premise.
Shut up and take my money.
Yep.
I'll buy this game because, you know, the Telltale Walking Dead game is wicked.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah, and then they came out with, like, here's a let's play of it before the actual game was released. They gave you a little bit of, you got an idea of what the game was about and how it played, and I was like, this game's awesome. Ollie Moss is an artist who is most famous for his renditions of the Star Wars trilogy movie posters.
Yeah.
If you just Google Ollie Moss and hit images, you'll recognize his pictures immediately. He also did the cover art for Resistance 3.
Nice.
And he was the artist in this game. And it's gorgeous.
Really?
Just the art in the game is just so friggin' pretty.
Yeah.
And it's just like you're playing a picture, pretty much.
PS4 or PC?
PS4 and PC.
Where did you play it?
I played it on the PC.
Okay.
But there's not much difference between the PC and the PS4. And so the game takes place in 1989? Question mark? 1989 in Wyoming Forest.
I can't hear the words 1989 without wanting to break into some back to the wall and slide. It's 1989.
There you go, yeah.
Anyway.
So in 1988, there was a really big forest fire at Yellowstone. Yellowstone, I
think? Real or just
for real?
Game? Okay.
And the U.S. government was criticized for its lack of fire watchers there, and they essentially just let the park burn almost completely to the ground. And so in 89, there was a huge hiring campaign to get people to man these fire watch outposts to prevent wildfires.
Sure.
And so the game starts off as kind of like a text adventure almost. You get introduced to your character, whose name is Henry. And, you know, you kind of make decisions that kind of give you an idea of what you want your Henry to be. So, you know, you meet your wife and you're like, how do you meet her? You get a dog. What do you name the dog? And like 5 minutes into this game hits you right in the feels. Like,
oh, yeah.
This is going to be a tough review because I don't want to spoil anything about the game, but you make some pretty important decisions and, you know, things happen to Henry that end up having him take a job in the summer in the Wyoming wilderness. The guy's in his, like, 40s to kind of get away from it all.
Okay.
So, crap happens, okay? and so, the game revolves around Henry in a... And in between the text-based stuff that goes on, it kind of goes into little bits of cutscenes where it's interactive as you're hiking towards the... Firewatch outpost. The beginning of the game is you getting into your car, and then you get out of the car, and then you start your hike. It's a 2-day hike from where you park your car to your watchtower, essentially. And so you hike there, and then eventually you get to your watchtower. And so the only other character in this game is the person in charge of you. Her name is Delilah, and she is in another watchtower that you can see in the far distance, but you never see her. She's only ever over the walkie-talkie, so this is your only source of dialogue. And so throughout, it's like a walking adventure game, kind of, pretty much.
Right, right.
And so throughout the game, there are instances where you'll have to talk to Delilah, and you pick different responses, and those responses kind of dictate where your relationship with Delilah goes throughout the entire game. And, I mean, there are instances where Delilah asks you a question or makes a comment, and you can either come up with something witty or, you know, be a dick about it, or you could just not say anything at all, and she remembers all this stuff, and it changes the relationship between you and her.
Right.
That's a very Walking Dead kind of thing.
Yeah,
too.
It is. It's very Walking Dead-y. Yeah. You don't see those prompts, though. Yeah. There won't be, like, a Delilah thinks you're a real asshole. Like, you won't get any of that stuff, right? So you just kind of wing it as you go along. And from the offset from the text adventure, you kind of get a sense of how your Henry would react to certain situations. So I was... As I was playing, you know, she asked me a certain question, and I'm like, would I share that information with her, or would I kind of keep it to myself? And then I remembered, oh, well, I kind of responded with this, so I'll just keep going, like, with that kind of emotional playstyle, right? So the game, it's going to be very hard to review without giving stuff away. So there are certain points I'll bring up. One, it's pretty. I already said that. Mm. It's like walking into a painting. It's so gorgeous. I love the art style in the game, the way it looked, the way it felt. You're just very immersed in it. It was wonderful. It was a great experience. Two, the storyline was very good, ? Because, like, so as the story progresses, I can say this. The story starts off with you're in your tower, you see fireworks, and you walk by a sign. You may not notice it because you may not be as explorative as I was. And I went over to the bulletin board at the parking lot, and it said no fireworks because there's a risk, the fire risk is extremely high.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the stupid kids, goddamn kids, shooting off fireworks. And Delilah's like, you need to go over there and set them straight. And I was like, okay. You walk over there and you find out who's setting off fireworks and stuff. So that's how the game starts. And then stuff happens, and the game turns into like a thriller almost.
Really?
And like to the point where I'm like, you can't really see me, but like I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yeah,
literally,
yeah, yeah.
Like, oh God, what the hell's happening here? Like, it got really good.
Really?
Yeah, and then the ending happened.
Oh no.
Goddamn ending! It's like... It's just like, whoa, the stuff's going on, and it's really great. And then, like, the ending comes, you're like, oh, here comes the ending, and you're like, oh. So, that's the ending of the game. And then the credits roll, and you're like, oh, that's really the ending of the game. And then you're like, and then, you know, I kind of had to take a moment, just kind of step back and reassess the game. And I was like, does this ending make sense? Yeah, kind of, because at the point where it became, like, a real thriller, you were like, is this plausible? I don't know. but the story had so much promise.
Yeah.
And the way it ended, I wasn't a huge fan of.
Mm.
It got so good, and then you're like, it almost felt like they were like, where does this go? I don't know. Let's just kind of wrap it up, and then here's the ending, guys.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
They like tacked it on kind
of yeah.
thing. Yeah.
I mean, like, there's a really deep ending to it. You're kind of like, oh, if you really just think about it, and then like that's what really what it meant, and it was really just like a game about exploring loneliness and all this stuff. Like, stop it. Like, the game was so, like, the storyline got so good and it had a lot of promise, and then the ending happened and I didn't really like it that much. That shouldn't discourage you as much as it probably will from playing this game, because the journey to get there was so good.
Yeah.
And I would still recommend it. Like, the ending was not great, but I'd still recommend this game because it's a lot of fun and because it's 4 hours.
Oh, okay.
I got through this game in 4 hours and 10 minutes.
Full price game?
No, $25.
Oh, right on. Okay,
it
cool.
So it cost $25, which I understand why. And I've seen reviews anywhere from 4 hours to 6 hours to 3 hours. People could just whiz right by this. There's a lot of little nuances that you can kind of find in the game that kind of flush it out for you and make it unique for you, kind mm-hmm. of. Ultimately, the game starts in the same place and it ends in the exact same place. So you do have that sense of, oh, yeah, my game's really unique, but is it? Because all the endings are the same.
Yeah.
Right.
The journey is different for almost everybody. So, you know, the journey's there and it's like, okay, that's really cool. But ultimately, you don't really have that sense of this is my unique story, because all the stories going to be the same. And it made me think about the length of a game and your money's worth. Mm-hmm. The $25 is basically a Blu-ray, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, about that price.
Yeah.
And the movies are going to be like 2 hours, 2.5 hours. This game was 4.
Yeah.
Right.
And it played like a movie. It certainly played like a movie. It had a beginning, middle, and end, and there was a climax, and it was huge. And then, like, it may be one of the Star Wars movies. We're like, oh, that was it? Okay, whatever. But was it worth $25? Absolutely.
All right.
It was 4.5 hours. And when you hear, oh, I've got a game, and I finished it in 4 hours, you're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not worth your money. It was $25. It was like, it was longer than a movie, and it's interactive. And the story, for the most part, was really cool. The voice work in this game is awesome.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Henry,
is it anybody known?
Yes. Henry is played by Rich Summer, and he was in Mad Men. He played Harry Crane in Mad Men.
Oh, he's Harry.
Yeah,
okay,
he's
cool.
Harry Crane in Mad Men. When I first heard him, I thought it was, what's his name from CNN? He used to have a show on the Food Network.
Anthony Bourdain?
Yes, I thought it was Anthony Bourdain. Okay. For a little bit, I was like, that's kind of Anthony Bourdain-y. I was like, is that him? That'd be really cool if it was him. And then I found it was Summer, and I was like, oh, that's great, because I really liked him.
Mm-hmm.
The voice work in the game is phenomenal, and it really sucks you into the story. But the story was almost the problem, because the ending wasn't great.
Right.
And I had to stop and say, did I have fun with this game? Yes, I did. But how good is a game if the ending's bad?
I wonder if it's, you know,
yeah.
when it comes to like sketches, like sketch comedy and stuff, they always say that the hardest thing to write is the ending, because you just want to like get to the meat of the story.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
And then you're just like, oh, we've got to wrap it up, so we're over. And then you just walk away.
Like, there were so many twists to the story, and at one point you're like, where is this? This could go anywhere, and holy crap, this is good. And then close to the end of the game, I was kind of like, oh, if this is what I think it is, no, it can't. And then it happened, and I was like, come on, it's just like, there's so much promise, and then that's how it ended.
So, I mean, now that you're conflicted, what kind of score would you give this game?
One other thing, before I give it a score, there were a couple glitches in the game,
mm-hmm.
but they got fixed early on with a patch, and that's, okay, whatever, that happens. And, I don't know. There were also a couple plot holes in the game.
Mm.
There was at one point, I'm trying to figure out how to word it without giving anything away, but there was one point where Delilah does something and she tells you to go somewhere. So you go to that place and you find out she was there. And you're like, why didn't she just come to my watchtower and talk to me in person? Why did she? The path literally was right by your watchtower. She should have. She could have just knocked on the door and said, "Hey, let's talk." But she like went out of the way and did all this stuff. There were a couple of plot holes in the game where I'm like, "That doesn't make sense."
Yeah.
And the I said that the game's art is great and it sucks you right into this world and it's a forest and you want to explore it. And the amount of invisible walls in this game are unreal.
Really?
Where this game could have very much benefited from being just like a completely open map.
Yeah, one would think it's a forest, right?
Yeah.
That's how they would play it.
But there were, you know, and as much as it makes sense that I'm not walking off a cliff and killing myself, like it prevents you from doing that. Mm-hmm. This is just one giant invisible wall. It still felt like almost like an open world. And I did like the way they executed exploring it because there's no map. Like, there's no, like, up, like, map on your game HUD or anything. If you want the map, you hit M on the computer, and his map pops up. And you have to zoom into it, and then it will show you where you are on the map, and then you got to kind of orient yourself, and you have a compass, and you kind of figure out, oh, I got to go north here, so which way is north? And, okay, I figured it out. It's this way.
Yeah.
It's a lot more interactive, and it was very immersive in that sense, especially with the map. Like, that's just sent it over the top.
Mm-hmm.
But The ending wasn't good, and I had fun, but the ending wasn't good, and it upsets me so much because I wanted to just fall in love with this game. Yeah. Like I was so much looking forward to this game, and then that ending happened,
sounds like you were falling in love with the game until the
ending. I was, and then the ending happened, and you're like, it's good, but it's not great. I'm giving it a 6.5 out of 10.
What?
Yes.
Wow, I did not expect that at the end.
It's just, the ending was just, it just kind of just, like, okay, guys, have fun. And a lot of the story is left in a lurch. You're like, okay, so what happens with Henry now? What happens with Delilah now? And you kind of are left to it, to your own device. And hey, if you're into that, sure, whatever. Like, oh, it's got a really deep meaning and it explored all these feelings. And it's like, yeah, that's great. But the game was fun up until a certain point when the ending happened and you're like, what?
Like, I got it.
Yeah.
I got it.
Okay, the ending's great. Now, that was almost like it was too easy, the ending,
yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
Everything
happened. It's like, oh, it's really great, but we got to wrap it up. Here you go.
One thing Firewatch is not is an exclusive.
No.
Last week we talked a bit about how Quantum Break is no longer an exclusive for the Xbox One. It'll be on the PC. That rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. We talked about it in some detail, but our pal Riley Little from GameRant.com wrote an opinion column for GameRant about why he thinks exclusives don't matter as much. So we said, you know what? Let's call him up and have him explain himself.
Well, I mean, the reality is now, if you look at platforms like what companies have had the most exclusives? It's probably Nintendo has the best exclusive IP, I would imagine. Like they are defined by their games, and the Wii U has sold horribly.
Right,
it has not done anything for them, and the only people who have bought it solely for Nintendo games, and it's just not enough. You need more, and what Microsoft has done is they have in the past, like last year, 2015 was the best exclusive lineup of games like ever. They billed it as, and even then, the Xbox is apparently being outsold, 2-1 essentially by the PlayStation 4,
mm-hmm.
which has had very few exclusives in comparison. So the piece in general was about how exclusives are kind of overhyped, I guess. In a sense, they serve a purpose. Don't get me wrong, because like if a Nintendo console came out and it had all the third-party support but it didn't have the games, nobody would buy it.
Right.
So they certainly play a role. But what I suggest or what I'm saying in the column is that exclusives, like they play a role, but they kind of don't really have the same grab anymore, which is why Microsoft is really smart by taking something like Quantum Break, which looks like a great game. I'm sure it's going to review pretty well. But it's not a console seller.
Yeah.
No.
Like you look at that and that's not going to move hardware.
Mm-mm.
So they need to make money back by bringing it to PC.
Right.
That's the only way they can really profit off this game. And by doing so, they expand their reach to an entirely new audience. And that's something that we're kind of seeing Nintendo do as well now. They're kind of shifting into mobile. This year, they're supposed to have, I think like 4 games coming out by the end of the year, all on mobile devices. So Nintendo has done that in a bid to get people to see or kind of like get interested in its IP again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what Microsoft is doing with this. I mean, if you look, the most like interesting aspect of their lineup to me is what's not coming to PC. Because you look at it and you go, Rare Sea of Thieves is on PC. And like, oh, Gears of War Ultimate Edition is coming to PC and Killer Instinct. And these games alone are good, but I feel games like Gears of War on PC serve a purpose solely to get people enticed for Gears of War 4, which will be Xbox exclusive.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you're playing it on PC, you're going to be like, oh, man, I kind of like this game. And then, oh, well, the sequel, which is like everyone's talking about it right now, it's made by the Coalition in Vancouver, so it's a Canadian game.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of neat. But like people are going to be like, ah, I really like the first game that I played, the remastered version. I really want to play this new one. So, and the only way to do that is to invest in hardware. So that's basically what these companies are doing now, is they're baiting people to get interested in IP so that they can commit to a larger purchase down the road.
And I think that's a really smart way to go, because I think something that the general gaming populace loses sight of a lot or often is that it's a business. These companies are out, these studios are out to make money. And if they don't make money, they're not going to make good games. And it's sort of chicken and egg, where you have to invest in this game to give them the money to make another game and so on and so forth. So it's smart for them to look at and say, look, we're going to put this on as many platforms as possible or whatever makes sense for us, as you said, to introduce it to a new audience. And I think it's smart business practice, man, to get as many people hooked as you can on different platforms, as long as the caveat is, as long as the product doesn't suffer when you spread it out like that. Like, you don't want to spread it too thin and have your dev teams, you know, push to their limits, and then they can't put the product out as good as it is or as good as it should be. Because I think that's sort of the worry that people have, is that, oh, if it's on Xbox and it's on PC, then the dev teams are split two ways and the product might not be as good, which I think is a concern that people have.
Yeah, no, I mean, those are valid somewhat. I think the thing that people... The backlash from Quantum Break was largely from entitled gamers. I bought an Xbox, and like I don't know how many of them bought it for Quantum Break. I can't imagine many of them did.
I hope they didn't.
For Halo and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like other friends had it, but I mean, the reality is, like, just because you bought an Xbox doesn't mean you're entitled to Quantum Break. Like, you're gonna have to buy it anyway. Just because it's coming to PC doesn't like ruin the title for you.
Yeah,
it's still you still get to play it.
A decent game.
Like, yeah, you still get to play it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you're opening a door and you're making it more profitable. And in that regard, it's smart, because that way, like, you're more likely to greenlight sequels and build franchises.
Mm-hmm.
That.
Right. Or give a studio money to make a new IP. I mean, the money all goes to the one studio, right? So if Uncharted doesn't make, you know, bundles of money, then the likelihood is that The Last of Us never gets made. It's just they need the money to make those things.
Right.
Right, and it's weird because exclusive games aren't selling that well anymore. Like Halo 5 is the lowest selling Halo of all time.
Yeah, but that could also be because there's been like 9 Halo games and people are tired of it.
Yeah, because when you look
at for sure.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at games that Naughty Dog makes, like The Last of Us,
mm-hmm.
That's obviously sold super duper well because it was something, quote unquote, it was different. It wasn't the 16th iteration of the game that you've been playing since you were a teenager.
Yeah.
Like
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, for sure.
There is a level of boredom.
I think an interesting point that you made in your argument too is that there, even with exclusives, how many exclusives can you name that are really, like you put it, console sellers? A Halo is a console seller.
Yeah.
You know, Uncharted 4 is the upcoming Uncharted 4 is a console seller.
Essentially, anything big from Nintendo is a console seller.
Yeah, right. Nintendo. Like, Riley's right in the sense. But Riley's right in the sense that the only reason you would buy a Nintendo console is because you want to play Mario or Zelda.
I
want to
play the new Zelda. I want to play Smash. Yeah.
Admittedly, if Zelda was available on Xbox, I would play the hell out of it and I would never buy another Nintendo console again.
Well, I don't know if you've been following the NX rumors, but apparently it's going to interact with PS4 and Xbox One somehow.
What?
Seriously?
Oh, yeah.
Do tell, Riley.
Apparently.
All right. Rumor has it.
It's going to be an app. I'm not sure to what extent. They may. It sounds like they're probably doing a streaming service of some sort, like some sort, kind of like Netflix, but for Nintendo IP.
Oh, really? Interesting.
It sounds like they're going to do something like
It'll interact with your Xbox and PlayStation by setting fire to it remotely from your Nintendo, burning it.
Yeah, you download the app and it just like bricks the console.
Yeah, it's just a virus that says buy Nintendo.
But to go back to the other point, you know, for every exclusive game that is a console seller, the majority of them aren't. They're nice to have, but they're not really console sellers.
No, and that's kind of what is happening. I mean, Nintendo, to their credit, I mean, they've done okay for a company that basically is relying on themselves to generate any sort of revenue.
Right, yeah.
I mean, they don't have the support of any third parties at this point, really. I mean, once in a while, like, Ubisoft bailed, Electronic Arts bailed the hardest. They don't even put sports titles on it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of stick to, like, the Toys to Life games and Nintendo IP.
Right.
And that's really all they have.
And frankly, when people buy Nintendo, that's what they're looking for, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, they tried with, I remember, what was it, Arkham Knight came out, not Arkham Knight, Arkham City came out, and, like, I think it was a few, like, Splinter Cell came out, but, I mean, nobody really wants to play that on Nintendo console. You have other things to play that on, because generally, I would say not all gamers, but a lot of gamers have more than one console or a console and a PC or something. So I don't know. You don't really turn to Nintendo for that stuff. You just want to play your Marios and your Donkey Kongs and your Zeldas on that anyway.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Like, if you want, like, some living room fun, like, if you want to have friends over, like, a Nintendo console's the way to go.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, I don't think many games support, like, couch co-op anymore, which is kind of sad. But, I mean, like, going back to the topic, it's just, there's no... Like, exclusives serve a purpose to a point, but at this time, like, Nintendo's probably wishing they had some of their games on other consoles. Like, if you brought Mario to an Xbox or something like that, it would sell gangbusters. It would be ridiculous how well that would do.
Yeah,
but it would also potentially tank their own unit, though.
That's
if you could get a Mario or a Zelda on an Xbox or a PlayStation,
then
your need to buy a Nintendo console dips significantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, in the piece I wrote, I mentioned, like, I'm not saying put Halo 5 on PlayStation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, that'll never happen because, why? Like, sure, they generate income, but then you look at games like Minecraft, which Microsoft owns.
Yeah.
That's on Wii. They just brought it to Wii U. It's on PS4. It's on PC. It's on Xbox. It's all over the place because they know that, I mean, Minecraft, as great as it is, probably isn't going to move many consoles anyway.
Nope.
No,
it's like a, oh, I'm already here, and that, like, that is too, I'll grab it. Like, that, it's one of those.
But you know what's interesting about this is I get people, and I'm sure Christine and Patrick do all the time, and you do too all the time, people come to me, well, what should I get, a PlayStation or an Xbox? People come to me all the time
and say that. Yeah.
And my one answer to them is, you know, the units themselves are almost identical. There is no real discernible difference between a PlayStation 4 and an Xbox One. Spec for spec, they're almost the same. The difference is, A, what do your friends have or people that you play with? What do they have? Because if they mostly have Xboxes, get an Xbox because you want to play with them. And B, which exclusives do you care about? If you're a big Halo fan, get an Xbox. If you're really into Uncharted, get a PlayStation. And that's usually, to me, what the deciding factor is. What do your friends have? And then the exclusives. And you look at the exclusives and you say, oh, I'm a really big fan of Gears of War. Well, then you should probably get an Xbox. So I think that's one of the deciding factors that I tell people.
Well, and I think Microsoft took a huge misstep, kind of going, like, veering off a little bit. But, like, initially their pitch was online always, the only way to play. You can't share games or anything like that. And it immediately turned off the influencers.
Yeah.
Who were just like, no, okay, well, I'm just going with PS4 because it's more of what I want.
Yeah.
Right.
And, I mean, obviously Microsoft turned around and they're like, okay, we're not doing that because that was dumb. But it was too little too late at that point.
Yeah, people had already made up their minds.
They're just being overwhelmingly outsold by the PlayStation.
Yeah.
I mean, they are generating revenue and they're outpacing sales of the original Xbox 360, which is good. But they've missed out on that initial audience in a big way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, Riley, it's certainly an interesting column and an interesting argument. And I think, you know, if people have thoughts, they can tweet us at GotGame590 and let us know what they think. Do exclusives matter as much as they used to? Would you like to see certain exclusives hop consoles and onto different units so you can play them? It's an interesting idea. But thanks for your time, pal. I know it's Saturday morning, so I appreciate you just devoting a few minutes to us.
Hey, no worries. I'm going to go back to bed now.
That's our pal Riley Little from GameRant.com. Go and check out his article on why he thinks exclusives aren't as big a deal anymore. Christine, maybe we can throw a link up on our show blog this
Absolutely
week.
Absolutely we
All
can.
Right. Yeah, we can. All right, cool. I would love to see if he said no, to hell with it.
Just screw that out. No, nobody gets to read
I'm
it.
I'm sorry.
No, we'll throw the link up on our show blog when we tweet it out this week from @GotGame590. All right, two interviews down. 1.5 reviews, I guess, down if you include Steve's talking about Street Fighter V. Christine, now that brings us to you.
Yes.
The final installment of the Chronicles series from the people that make the Assassin's Creed games has arrived.
Yes, it has.
As far as we know, it's the last one. They only talked about three. We've been to China. You loved it. We went to India. You didn't love it.
Didn't love it.
Now we're going to Mother Russia.
Mother Russia.
So we're batting 1-for-2, which in baseball terms is amazing because you're batting 500.
500.
But in realistic terms, it's not that great.
It's not that great.
So where do we lie with Assassin's Creed Chronicles Russia?
Picture it.
Russia.
Hang on, let me think about it.
1918.
Okay.
Mother Russia.
Yeah. I'm picturing cold.
I'm very cold right
it's
now.
It's the end of the Tsarist regime.
Yeah. Okay. So
they have just been slaughtered.
Okay.
And one assassin who has decided to leave the Brotherhood takes one final mission.
Wait, so do the assassins kill everybody?
No, no. It's the Bolsheviks.
I just pictured a really cold Russian tundra with a whole bunch of bodies.
I feel like I'm part of that Schwarzenegger commercial again.
Yeah.
Now go on.
No, it's okay. Nikolai, I may get his last name
wrong. Volkov.
Orlov. Yeah. He's a, right off the bat, you learn he's an assassin and he's done. He's done with the Brotherhood. He's tired of being an assassin. He and his family are going to leave, but he has to do one last mission. He has to go and find a box that happens to be in the castle of the Tsarist family, who, if you know your history, the family basically gets completely slaughtered. So you come in, you go into the castle, and you find the last daughter of the Tsarist regime. Her name is Anastasia. So this then becomes your mission. You're also looking for the box, but you're also helping Anastasia. Mm-hmm. And this is where I kind of liked where this game went. You got to switch back and forth once you get Anastasia, which doesn't happen for a while. Like, you play for a bit before you meet up with her. You get to play back and forth with her, but she has no real skills. She's just a daughter who's trying to get out after watching her family get completely murdered and trying to avoid getting murdered herself.
Trying to avoid getting murdered? Very important.
And Nikolai, who also has his mind on the prize, he just wants to get this over with. He wants to go, but of course he's an assassin and he has compassion, so he kind of takes her under the wing. And the two of them begin an interesting journey. They do have an interesting connection. They make an interesting connection with the previous Chronicles games, and that you find out that the box that they're looking for belonged to our favorite Ezio Auditore.
Yay!
And because it has that connection, Anastasia, who is having it, starts to kind of channel previous assassins. So she starts telling the stories about being life as an assassin in China, which of course is obviously the first one. And so you kind of, you have to rush her out and kind of get her to freedom and get the box back to the Brotherhood while deking and avoiding and sneaking and whatnot. It sounds exciting.
Uh-huh.
It's not really that exciting once you're in it, because unfortunately this game really falls into the same pitfalls that the other games have had, where 99.9% sneaking. It doesn't really have anything to do other than sneaking. You can't really do anything. As an assassin, you're kind of a crappy assassin unless you're sneaking.
Right.
Like, you don't, there's no backup plan. They don't offer you any kind of fighting ability. And that was the fault in the previous games. I felt like you had to play the game the way the game wanted you to play it. You didn't have a lot of other options. So it's mostly just sneaking from one thing to another. You really have minimal health, so you're one shot and you're dead. Which I, again, found very frustrating in the other games. There's a lot of repetition. There's some cool things that they do add in, like since it's 1918, all the machines and the technology have evolved. So now you have runs on trains, you have actual guns, not just those crappy little 1800s guns.
Yeah.
There's cars around, like you're fighting, literally the Russian Revolution is happening around you, and so you have to...
Pretty peaceful time.
Yeah, you have to dodge things like... you have to be more aware of your surroundings, whereas in India and in China, they had things like the birds would alert the guards. Well, this time you have things like tripwires, you have electronic fences, you have lights that you can shoot out. The way they bring in the guns in this game is you will occasionally play as a sniper. So as Anastasia is running through a field, you have to snipe all of the guards before they see her. Mm. And that was actually the part that I really liked in this game. I liked bringing in the guns to it. I thought that that was fun. It was always timed shooting, so you had to get there in limited time. Nobody had to see her. Like, it wasn't like you could dilly-dally. You really have to be on the mark, on the mark. And I thought that really was something that broke up the monotony of just, like, climbing a building or scooching across a train and trying to do this. And, but all in all, it really does suffer from the same problems that the previous games had. They're just not the fun. Like, it's a minimalist story, and when you've got a series like Assassin's Creed to, you know, dumb it down so much play-wise while still giving them an obscene amount of weaponry to play around with, but you can't really do anything. Like, the thing that kills me with this game is that if you're sneaking around, if you're on a window ledge, and if somebody detects you, you can no longer assassinate the person who's on the ledge above you. For some reason, that you just can't do it. They sneakily, like, are able to dodge all of your attacks. Yeah. I'm like, really? Because I'm an assassin.
I've been an assassin.
Yeah, for quite some time. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I could Hidden Blade the hell out of this guy. Yeah. Even if I'm only, like, it's not even, it's like a yellow detection, not even the full red detection. It's kind of like
just
sensing.
I'm alert,
you're
but
there.
I don't know you're a threat. Yeah.
I'm so alert that I'm able to quickly deacon dodge all of your attacks.
Well, I don't know about you, but whenever I'm on the subway and someone tries to attack me and I'm aware of them, I dodge everything.
I can do, you're magical. And then it's one shot and they're down.
Yeah.
So again, this is the kind of thing that I really think is the fault of this series. It just it's not as much fun as it should be. It's too limiting. I did like the story a little bit better than the other ones. I did like a little bit more of the mix up, which I thought was a big fault of the India one. It was just too repetitious. It was the onus of it being your one shot and done. It was so frustrating. Like, there's frustrating fun and there's frustrating not fun, and this was frustrating not fun.
Right.
I think this game, now that you look at all of the whole chronicles of it, it was kind of like a detour, I guess. They were just kind of like, well, here's an idea we had. We'll see if that works. It's almost like it would have been a better mobile game. Like, if you're going to dumb down the gameplay of it, kind of...
Bring it to mobile.
Bring it to mobile and then make it, like, a little more streamlined. Like, don't streamline the gameplay, but... say, but there's all of these other ways you can attack, and then not let people use them.
Don't give me 50 weapons.
Yeah, like, there were times where I thought, okay, well, if I'm going to get through this situation, I'm going to throw down a smoke bomb, and then I'll double assassin them, and then I'll go to the, and then before the other guy does this, I'm going to throw a dart at him, da-da-da. Except that it doesn't actually work that way, because the second you throw down the smoke bomb, sometimes, maybe it was just a glitch in the game, but sometimes one of the two guys would still see you. Like, he'd still be very aware of your presence, and so it just didn't seem as smooth, which is funny, because when you're walking around in Russia, or on the train, or on the house, you really have to be kind of super smooth. Like, you have to be very well timed and kind of like really going through it. So to have the gameplay for moving around, but then having it for action be so polar opposite was very frustrating. So, you know, good for you, I guess, Ubisoft, for trying something new.
Two claps?
I think that, I mean, there is actually an Assassin's mobile game. I think there's an Ezio mobile game, and now there's going to be a book series coming out. So they've really, for the fact that there's no
really
full Assassin's game coming this year, they're really like, well, let's see how we can branch off of that franchise and do other things. Yeah, I don't think Russia I liked better than India. India, I think I gave it a 6.5. I didn't like this so much that I would give it a 7, though. So it's kind of in a weird, like, 6.75 category.
It's in a Firewatch area.
I don't think we've ever gone that decimal in a game.
It's because I just can't give it a 7. I can't at all. So I would give the entire series, I guess, a 6.5. I don't know. It's hard to give with the 0.5 because it just wasn't as satisfying as it should have been. And I think if I say 6.5, it's still saying, yeah, it was a pretty decent game, because it's really not. So
it was a game, man. No, it wasn't.
It's a game, but it's just not fun. Yeah. And if you're not having any fun, and if
then
it's a franchise that you like, then what's the point? But I'm not going to say, like, it's a 4, but I really wouldn't encourage people to buy this if they were really a big fan of the franchise. I think you're only going to be let down. If you're kind of a half-assed fan of the franchise, maybe you'd like it. Maybe you really like 2D challenging side scrollers where it's really repetitious over and over again and you just keep doing the same thing over and over again.
That's a very very specific genre.
What kind of games do you like?
Yeah, I like 2D side scrollers with a lot of stuff that you can't really actually do and it's not actually very fun in the end of it.
Like they do try to make a couple of little changes. Like they have an interesting, in the last one you got to wear a disguise, which was kind of neat, and then this one you could.
This in India you could wear the disguise.
Yeah, you could buy a little disguise, and they try to add in little things to encourage and enhance your sneaking ability, but it's not enough. It's really not enough.
It's the perfect genre for that one guy who wants that one game.
As an Assassin's Creed fan, I'm not going to say I'm insulted by the game because it was a game, but it's not good. It's not good.
So what was that score? What was that highly decimal fraction score you gave?
It's 6.75 for Assassin's Creed Chronicles Russia.
Last question before we wrap up because it's been a pretty long show.
Yeah.
If you had to play China now after playing Russia and India, do you think your outlook would have been different?
I don't. You know what? I actually thought about that this morning. I was like, I kind of want to go back and play China now that I've played the other two and see. Maybe. I mean, but even I think my score for China was a 7. So they were all kind of in the same loppy,
ballpark.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, if you want to do it, it's just, it's hard. It's, I'm being very generous.
Yeah.
I'm going to admit it. I'm being exceptionally generous. In realistic terms, I would probably give this franchise closer to a 5.
All right. So that is Assassin's Creed Chronicles Russia. For now, we're done with the Chronicles series, unless they drop another one on us out of nowhere.
Let's face it. They probably will.
Assassin's Creed Chronicles Cuba. It's coming soon.
Cuba.
Viva Cuba.
Viva Cuba.
Can I have the $1 trillion bill back? What money?
I think we can trust the president of Cuba.
The Simpsons.
Oh, Simpsons. References for everything. References for everything. All right. It's been a long show, but that's all the time we have for this week. So our special thanks to Chris Waters from GameSpot, author of The Gamer's Bucket List, 50 Games to Play Before You Die. Go pick it up. Also, Ryan Little from GameRant.com. Go read his column. You can find the link to it on our show blog. Steve Lung, who's not here right now, but he was here earlier. Christine Chubb, Patrick Lucciani. My name is Momin Qureshi. You'll hear from us again next week. Goodbye.